We appreciate Brother Richard for an excellent presentation, very thought-provoking and informative, maybe very challenging. And we're going to now open the floor to discussion, questions, and comments from the brothers who are present. Raise your hand and we'll get the microphone to you. Please stand up and talk into the microphone. Noise won't come through the speakers, but it will go into the recording for the benefit of posterity. All right. Any questions? Roger Boone.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate it very much. As you were talking, I had a question about Galatians. I've always, 1 and 6, Galatians 1 and 6, or 9. I've always wondered, I've related Galatians to that problem in Acts chapter 15, and that the other gospel that they were teaching was a return to Judaism, the Judaizing teachers in Acts 15. Do you see any connection between Galatians 1, 6, and 9? And if so, how did that match with what you taught in the transition period?
I appreciate that. I would think so. The churches of Galatia were Jew and Gentile. And if they were being taught that one must be circumcised to be saved, that's a different gospel. And that could not be taught to Gentiles. Because that would clearly be false doctrine. A Gentile could not be circumcised for religious reasons. The Jews were allowed to have their children circumcised, I believe, right up until the destruction of Jerusalem, because they had been doing that for centuries. I don't know. They may have thought that it was, you know, essential to salvation. And I don't know that matters. They just thought it was a commandment that they should keep.
Alan Bonifay.
That's very good. I think we might need to knock on a few doors together to sort out a couple of wrinkles, but I thought it was excellent. In Acts 21:23, about this vow that Paul was to take with these four men, I think you explained that passage correctly. I don't think Paul sinned. I think that it was allowed because of this transition period. However, I don't think that was a sin offering. I don't think it could have been a sin offering, because that would have violated the offering of Jesus once for all. And it looks to me like the parts of the law that they were allowed to keep would be those parts that did not conflict with New Testament doctrine directly. Like, for instance, circumcision wouldn't necessarily conflict with some actual teaching of New Testament doctrine. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Jews were able, after Pentecost, Jewish Christians up until AD 70, I don't think they were able to take a Nazarite vow, for example, because you couldn't take grape juice at all if you took a Nazarite vow. I think that would have outlawed it. And so the vow that Paul had in Acts 18, I don't think that was a Nazarite vow. Now, I know all the commentators say it was, but I don't think it was, because I don't think Paul would have violated number 6 and 3, or would have violated New Testament teaching about the Lord's Supper to keep number 6 and 3. That's what I mean. So I think that's just a caveat, sort of.
Sure, sure. I understand what you're saying.
And also in 2 Timothy 3, that did include some New Testament books.
Yes.
1 Timothy 5 says Luke was inspired.
Right.
Other questions? Austin?
Appreciate it very much. I don't know that I'd actually thought about it in that way as far as a transitional period. In our Wednesday night studies, we had discussed, as far as John's disciples, why they didn't automatically just kind of switch over to Jesus' disciples once John identified Jesus as the Messiah. And that was kind of the same conclusion that we came to. There's a transition period that occurs with these types of things. So I appreciated that and understood that a little better. You mentioned Romans 14, and I agree with your with how you presented that. I think it makes a lot of sense with the Jewish holidays and things of that nature. Do you think that there are any principles that we can take for our modern day holidays from that passage? I know some people do with that and in regard to other liberties. Is that a fair thing to do, or should we just stick to it exclusively with the Jewish holidays that are under consideration there?
It's getting way off my topic, so I'm going to let the authority in Romans here in the assembly answer your question, because it has nothing to do with the Jewish nature of the church.
Well, that's right. It doesn't have anything to do with that. That's true. Well, I wrote in Romans 14, I think that what is said in Romans 14, Paul is very careful in chapter 15, verses 7 through 12, to point out that what he has been saying about Christians getting along, Jews and Gentiles, in matters of difference where there is no law given from God for the New Testament. If there's a law given from God, we must obey it, period. Jew or Gentile, whoever. If there's no law given for God from God, and Jews and Gentiles differ, Romans 14 and 15, 1 to 13, teaches them how to get along. And at the verses 7 through 12 of chapter 15, he's very careful to point out that what he has been saying applies to Gentiles as well as Jews. And so I think those passages apply to today, not necessarily to those direct issues that he was dealing with, but to logical extensions of those passages. Because, in fact, in Romans 15, I think it's 6, he says that what he has been saying applies to the Jews, the circumcision, and then verses 7 through 12, he cites 4 passages from their own law to show that what he has been saying applies to Gentiles as well.
Okay. Let me ask a question. In Acts 2, when it says that, verse 46, it says that after they obeyed the gospel, they were continually in the temple. Now, I've argued that when you read subsequent texts in the book of Acts, what it shows them doing in the temple is preaching. It doesn't show them worshiping according to the old system. This kind of goes to what Alan was saying. Is that accurate, or is it unnecessary for me to feel the need to vindicate those early Christians from going to the temple for temple worship?
Well, I think it's unnecessary to feel that way. And clearly, you can't show that they were... Nothing is said about them offering animal sacrifices, so you can't show that that was done. But it wouldn't matter as far as I'm concerned in regard to what was going on there. If they observed the Passover, they were going to go to the temple to have that lamb, sanctified for the Passover. If they observed Pentecost, there were certain rituals that they were going to do in observing the Feast of Pentecost.
You want a Bible? I believe it's Acts chapter 5 where it talks about priests being converted. Isn't that Acts 5? Hmm? 6 is close to 5. You know the passage, don't you, Richard?
Yes.
So tell me, do you believe that these men who were priests when they became Christians ceased to be priests until before the destruction of the temple? Or would they have continued in their priestly role? Would they have been able to, according to the transitional phase point that you've been making?
Well, you're asking a question that's going to take I have to make an assumption. That's like saying, do I believe that Cornelius resigned as being a centurion? Well, at some point, he recognized, I can't go kill people. And so he got out of the Roman military. And at some point, these priests, probably before the destruction of Jerusalem, came to the conclusion, we really oughtn't to be doing this because Jesus Christ is our sacrifice. But to say that they were baptized and the next week they said, well, we can't officiate anymore, I don't know that. That's helpful.
Other questions?
It was 6 and 7, by the way. I think that one thing that might help in this transition argument that you presented, which I think is correct, is that I think that how much of the Christian system dawned upon these early preachers and leaders and church members depended a little bit on their context and their time and how much they were thinking about it. Because in Acts 6 also, Stephen was brought before the Sanhedrin because he was preaching things that were against this holy place in the law, the temple and the law. And it sounds like, it seems to me that that's saying that Stephen came to a quicker understanding of what it meant that the law was nailed to the cross and taken out of the way and other statements like that. He came to a quicker appreciation and understanding of that than almost anybody in the church, even Peter. So I think maybe some of these things came to people more quickly than to other people. That's why the period's called transition.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Any other questions? Do you have any closing comments?
No. What I want you to take home, those of you that are especially younger and you're formulating, remember there's a transition. Remember that letter that was sent to the Gentiles, to the Gentile Christians, was prohibiting the idolatrous practices of being utilized or coming into the church, while Jewish practices were going to be tolerated for a while. You have to keep that in mind, or else you really struggle trying to explain why Paul did what he did in Acts 21 or any of the other things. But thank you very much, everybody.